This is The Topic is Trek, episode 88, for Friday, March 26th, 2021. Spock Day! Coming up in this episode, despite initial reports, William Shatner doesn't like to see himself. There is a new star date to observe. Paramount Plus is bringing more people to the mountain. Oh, I can't get that high. Anyway, all that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. All my tribbles seem so far away. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another fun, excitement-filled... The accolades are just pouring into this episode. We haven't even done it yet. It's amazing. I am one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord, and joining me, as always, first of all, beaming in from parts unknown with his signature catchphrase is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Bazinga!
No. Oh. No.
It's like he gave up trying.
He did. He's just going through some listicle on BuzzFeed or something. And also, Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I am happy to be operating within normal parameters today.
You sound like it.
Yeah, nominal parameters.
Nominal.
Hey, that was Zoom, all right? That was Zoom.
Oh, okay. I understand. Zoom. Well, we don't have a video feed, but Chuck, you want to describe what you're wearing?
I am wearing the black and gray from the, what are we calling this? First Contact, Insurrection,
Deep Space late Nine TNG later. Era. Yeah, late TNG DS9.
With
era.
The command red, so it's not the red shirt red. But as the show goes on and the environmental controls get out of whack, I will be shedding layers.
Yes.
Oh. Good thing we're not doing a video podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to turn my feed off right now, as a matter of fact. Anyway.
He's going to show us the Star Trek underwear later.
And before we begin anything else, we want to note here that William Shatner turned 90.
Yes. Happy belated birthday.
And he said that he hadn't watched the original Star Trek.
Actually, I think technically it was any Star Trek he was in. Yeah, not just TOS, because he did say, I've seen Star Trek V because, well, I directed it.
Maybe
he didn't.
Somebody gave him the tapes, but it was on beta and, well,
yeah. Perhaps he didn't see it.
I don't know. First of all, I believe he was at the premiere of the motion picture, so already I'm calling BS on that one.
Good point. He said it was just too painful to watch himself, which, I get that feeling. I know that feeling. You know, we've all heard ourselves for the first time, you know, outside of your head, and you sound funny, you know, like on a tape recorder or something.
We are our own worst critics.
Yeah. Now I've heard myself so many times, I don't care.
I don't know. Something about this rings like it's a great story to tell, Bill, but I'm not buying it. I'm just not buying it at all.
He's probably got a screen in every room with only him playing.
There's Barbary Coast room over here. There's TJ Hooker room over here. There's TOS over here.
Yeah. Has he seen any episodes of TJ Hooker?
Every night.
And on the
Heather
audio,
Locklear was on it. So that's.
We have Emergency 911 playing on this room over here. And
Yeah.
My nighttime the cleaners for my sleep problem over there. Anyway, let's move on. Oh Bill, to subspace chatter. I'm sure that's going to be fine with Charlie. What do you say, Charlie?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
somebody's surly.
Maybe. All right. Well, let's just end the show there then.
All right. All right. Sounds good.
Short segment.
Good night, everybody.
Jumping right to the movie review.
But we're going to disregard all that, and Chuck is going to tell us the first story.
That's right. The city of Boston has declared March 26th Leonard Nimoy Day. From now on, March 26th will be known as Leonard Nimoy Day in Boston, Massachusetts, as the city honors the late Star Trek actor. Nimoy first got his acting start in 1951, and throughout the 50s and 60s, racked up an impressive amount of television credits before taking on the role that would make him a cultural icon. Beyond Star Trek, isn't it Star Trek Beyond?
I thought that was Star Trek Beyond, yeah. That's
not, okay. He wasn't in that.
Beyond Star Trek, Nimoy lent his voice to several notable projects over the years, including Atlantis, The Lost Empire, and Transformers, Dark of the Moon. He also was a prolific director, helming two Star Trek movies and others outside the franchise, like Three Men and a Baby. Nimoy was born and raised in Boston, so this is the ultimate tribute for the actor. There's somebody else that has that birthday, too. It's, my nephew Travis is on the 26th. Oh, and me, too. Me, too.
Is it?
I was going to say.
Is it Travis Day in Boston as well? I didn't.
It's Travis Day in Trenary, Michigan.
Should I go into Boston tomorrow and see all the festive decorations that are up and the parade? And
there's some used Spock ears hanging from the lamppost.
Yeah. Those are the piñatas.
Just dangling in the wind.
I don't know. I think I'd be severely disappointed if I ventured into the city for that.
I'm surprised they didn't mention he lent his voice for In Search Of.
Well,
or that he was a photographer. I mean, that's,
yes, that's true too.
And a singer.
Yes, Bilbo Baggins. Bilbo Baggins.
I hope you don't have that on the ready there, Chuck.
No. Thank goodness for copyright infringement.
I love Nimoy, but where's Eric's when you need him?
All right, Eric. Well, let's move on to our next story before we get too far into that. Lower Decks is headed to DVD. Mm-hmm. The first season of Star Trek Lower Decks arrives on Blu-ray and DVD on May 18th. Today, Paramount Home Entertainment revealed the trailer for the release, which includes the first glimpse at some of the special features. The Blu-ray DVD and limited edition Steelbox offer fans all 10 episodes from the debut season. I know it's hard to believe it's just 10 episodes.
Yeah,
and nearly 2 hours of exclusive special features. That's almost like half the length of the entire season with bonus features.
Yeah.
An exclusive over-the-top action trailer based on the in-episode movie from Crisis Point, a deep dive into the crew of the USS Cerritos alongside producers, writers, and the cast of Star Trek Lower Decks, highlights characters' backstories and so forth. Oh, they got backstories! Yay, we can get to find out some backstory. Hmm. And, of course, the usual deleted scenes. It's hard to believe in an animated show you would have deleted scenes.
But that just sounds like poor planning.
It's like having the bloopers at the end of a Pixar movie. Well, you have to actually animate a blooper. It's not that doesn't work that way.
What was that movie? There was an animated movie and they had deleted scenes, but it was more like the storyboard, animation or the previs stuff. Ah. I know. I've seen that one, Rick and Morty, when they were trying to show a teaser, but they haven't done the animation yet. And they just had the voices with the pre-visual. Which is kind of neat to watch too, but there was a bunch of stuff in this article relating to the Lower Decks DVD Blu-ray. Had way too much to list here, but yeah, they got like 2 hours worth of stuff. What's that? As you said,
we're gonna have to get Dr. Erin McDonald back on,
so she can explain herself, or
yeah, explain the Star Trek thing.
Well, we
to
had
us.
Her right before the season launched, and she couldn't tell us much of anything, so. Now it's time to get some insights from her.
So now she can come on and not tell us anything about Prodigy. Look at that. And it's great, you know?
That's right.
It's going to be a short interview.
Or tell us about season 2 of Lower Decks or anything. She just can't tell us anything.
Yeah. Well, you know, and also speaking about Star Trek spinoffs. How's that for a segue? Paramount Plus has rounded out the cast of its upcoming new original series, the Star Trek Strange New Worlds, as production officially gets underway in Toronto. And I think I did it to myself. I should have given you all the
you gave yourself article. All the
nice
names.
Nice. Bush. So, there's a guy named Bush. So
Babs. Babs.
Babs O.
Oluskamunico. Yeah, Babs O. From Black Mirror and Dune. Christina Chong from Tom and Jerry and Black Mirror also. Cecilia Rose Goodling, Jagged Little Pill, and Jess Bush from Skinford, which I'm not familiar with, or Les Norton. And Melissa Navia from Dietland and Billions. They're all set as series regulars in the series based on the years of Captain Pike manning the helm of the USS Enterprise. They joined the previously announced Ethan Peck, Anson Mount, and Rebecca Romijn, who will be reprising their roles, of course, from Star Trek to a Discovery, season two of Discovery. So Stranger in Worlds premiere episode was written by Star Trek Picard EP Akiva Goldsman from a story from Oscar winner, the Oscar winner wrote with Alex Kurtzman, the fellow EP, Jenny Lumet. Goldsman and Henry Alonzo Myers serve as co-showrunners, with Goldman directing the premiere episode.
Interesting. So we don't know who any of these characters are portraying, and there are very few characters that we would expect to see from the Pike era.
Right. We really don't know much beyond Spock and Number One.
I was looking at them, trying to figure out which one's going to be Eric's.
Yes. Yeah. That's what we all want to know that. We all want to know. But we don't know if any of them are playing the Doctor, because we do know that the older gentleman who played the Doctor in the original pilot. And I don't know whether or not they would be casting somebody in a similar role from this cast, because it's a much younger cast. So it wouldn't be one of these people if they were doing recasting that same role again.
Yeah. I think there was a letter writing campaign to get Jeffrey Combs in there as the Doctor. I mean,
really,
he's been in Star Trek enough. Might as well throw him in this too.
Sure. And this time he could just be a plain old human.
Well, that wouldn't be very imaginative. Well, where's the challenge in that role? Oh,
I don't have to go sit in makeup for 2 hours or four, right?
Sign me up. Yeah.
But I think that would be awesome to see Jeffrey Combs in there as the Doctor. He could pull it off.
And keep in mind that this is the way this is going to go, is we're going to get dribs and drabs, cast announcements, slow reveals of what the characters are playing. Then we'll start to get some footage from the set and so forth. And it's going to be a long PR cycle.
Yeah. Long slog to get to the episodes.
Got to build up that excitement. Get some random shots of the set and out of context so everybody can speculate. Or here's another look at the ship.
Anson Mount standing around with a big robe over his uniform, trying not to be shot.
I'll start salting the pot with, like, here's a picture of Anson Mount singing karaoke on the cruise. Who cares?
Right. That's right.
But you have a story about something that we do care about, Chuck. Tell us about it.
I do. Let's see. Where were we? Voyager. I was just watching Voyager, as a matter of fact. They're getting a documentary. I think we may have heard of this or heard rumors of it. Well, now we know the title to this. It's rather long, but so are some of the others. It's called To the Journey, Looking Back at Star Trek, Voyager. It's so long, it's got two colons, but then so do Klingons. Yeah. Ba-doom-tsh. Okay.
Nom, nom, nom.
Like the studio's Star Trek Deep Space Nine documentary, What We Left Behind, Looking Back at Star Trek Deep Space Nine, another two-colon title. I'm sorry, that's just going to get out of hand. Right. The title is an evocative reference to the show's series finale, Endgame. 455 Films is the production team behind the beloved Star Trek-related documentaries What We Left Behind, For the Love of Spock. I just have to say it that way.
That does sound like a quote from Dr. McCoy. For the Love of Spock.
Chaos on the Bridge, The Captain's Close Up, Still Kicking, Get a Life, and now the upcoming Star Trek Voyager documentary. They make the case for the fundraiser, saying they are still in the early stages of production with more interviews and support footage yet to be filmed. Once that is complete, post-production expenses will need to be covered, such as editing, music, animation, color correction, sound, mixing, and CBS Star Trek footage licensing. The more we raise on this Indiegogo campaign, the more creative ways we have of making this documentary unique. And as of the release of this podcast, there are five days left to get in.
Yeah, I was trying to, I don't have it bookmarked. I was trying to see what the...
It's a second link right there.
Oh, is it in the notes? I noticed it was
The...
They're actually right at a million. It's like 800, almost 900. Oh, I'm sorry. They're at 940,000 right now.
The house number.
Everyone listening to the podcast sends in a dollar. There'll be $5 more ahead. No, never mind.
Hey, there. I think I am going to do this because they're, it's not too expensive, you know, $35. They got some lapel pins, which I don't care about that. But they have some shirts for like a dollar more. And one of them was like the Replicator Coffee Company, which I like. So nice. I may have to pick that one up. There's one that says Two Rock Rocks. You know, Tuvok's got a guitar. So anyway, there's some cool things there.
You want the Tuvix Rocks one is what you want.
No, right? No. Tuvix sucks, maybe.
Salamander Slam.
That poor actor that did Tuvix.
I know. I feel sorry for him. The actor said, we just couldn't keep a straight face. We're sorry. He was a fine gentleman and so forth, but we just couldn't. It was too silly.
You know, I think one of the stretch goals is if they get 10 million, Harry Kim gets a
promotion.
Okay. Yeah. How about that?
Every time I see the 455 films, I think of the house number that I grew up in. It was 455.
Oh, they were going to say it because it was 827. Because I don't understand the connection between those two.
Because they use numbers.
Ah, I understand now. Yep. All right. And in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news, well, this news blows. Well, it looks like Vulcan, Alberta, Canada is about to get a wind farm. Let me kind of make more whole and may have sense out of that. A 500 megawatt wind farm proposed for Vulcan County is headed to the Alberta Utilities Commission. If approved, the wind farm would be the third major green energy development in the county, which would consist of 83 wind turbines spread across 24,000 acres of privately owned farmland. Jason Schneider, the Reeve of Vulcan County, sounds like something out of Lord of the Rings. I don't know.
Or it sounds like something out of Star Trek. He's the Reeve of Vulcan.
Oh, the two towers will be larger than usual, standing at 115 meters tall, and with blades that have a rotor diameter of 170 meters. See, this one, I need the echo effect.
Yeah, I know.
The proposal states that not only will the area benefit from having the wind farm, but it could create approximately 300 construction jobs. Okay, so that's very good. And I got to put on my reminder here to try to get in touch with, visitor center, because their season must be coming up now.
That pretty soon.
Open again.
We need to get an interview with somebody at the visitor center.
Right. So I want to see if I can, the mayor. But they have to be open for them to be anybody. The phone is just going to ring in an empty building if I don't.
Please leave your message at the tone. I'm sorry. That mailbox is full.
Oh, that's right.
It's the future.
When you read this story, all I could think of was that song from the 80s. Boom, 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 boom. Green energy.
Oh. From Information Society.
Pure energy. Just pure change energy. It to green energy.
Yeah. Pure green energy. Yeah.
Now, that was an interesting mix of stories, and we have an additional 13 stories. That's right. It's kind of a slow time here in the Trekiverse, but don't worry. Things will heat up soon.
It's because they're all in production on the different shows.
That's like, right. So. They will have news when things happen. And these links are everything from the bedside manner of the real-life Julian Bashir to a look back at the vintage charm of some classic Star Trek conventions. And one of the photos that's in there, I'm not in the photo, but it's a convention that I ran or I helped run.
I was going to say, looking at the vintage charm, we don't have to look very far, do we, Chuck?
No, like, no.
Right there.
Right. So the there's the one that we see Gene Roddenberry.
So wait, take a couple minutes and tell us about the one you ran. How about that?
Well, I was one of the runners of the Star Trek Platinum Anniversary Convention. So if you go to the article, the very last picture at the bottom is Gene Roddenberry and Majel, and they're standing in the middle of the Boston Park Plaza's main ballroom, which is where I had a chance to actually introduce Gene when he gave one of his talks. And we had people from all aspects of Star Trek. We had Robin Curtis was there. George Takei was there. David Gerald was there. We had a bunch of writers that were there. And it was the big event for the 25th anniversary of Star Trek, which was therefore the Platinum Anniversary Convention. So this was 1986.
So did you end up were you able to enjoy any of it, or were you just busy working?
Busy working. I mean, I get to stop, introduce Gene, and then run right back out of the room. I didn't even get to hear his talk.
And Mark B. Lee wasn't there.
Mark B. Lee.
He seems like he's been at every convention, or at least it looks that way.
He might have been there. You have to check with him because it's all a blur to me. I can't remember who was there. I have to look sometimes at the actual flyer that I did up for it to remember who were the guests at this convention.
Well, as you said, you were busy, so I'm sure you don't remember who was there. Oh, I was there.
So thank goodness somebody took pictures that I can look back and go, oh, that looked like fun. I wish I'd been there. You were there. Oh, right. Never mind.
Hey, look at picture number 11. I recognize that Andorian. That looks like April, tour guide from the Star Trek Experience.
No, that is not April.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Because the person standing next to him is one of the people from Star Trek The Experience.
The Klingon characters from the Star Trek Experience attraction at the Las Vegas.
Look at there.
That wasn't... No, she wouldn't
be... It is her.
Is it? How do you know?
Characters from the Star Trek the Experience.
That doesn't
attraction.
Necessarily mean it's her. There, she wasn't the only Andorian.
I follow her on Facebook. I can send it to her.
I do too. Okay, go for it.
Actually, that Ferengi guy looks like a teenager Ferengi. He's kind of tall and lanky.
Yeah, I was going to say, awful tall there. Yeah,
I'm on the Ferengi basketball team.
There's lots of profit in basketball.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. All right. Well, it's about time to disconnect from subspace chatter. It's my favorite part of the show when I can say, get out of here, Charlie.
I want to stay.
No.
He's always the cheerful part of the show, isn't he?
I feel so much better already. All right. But our main mission. Oh, we should have an appropriate sound effect for main mission.
You get the bosun's kazoo.
A well-oiled machine, I tell you. A
Captain on the bridge
machine.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to talk about the next movie in our look back at all the Star Trek movies. And of course, we're talking about Star Trek First Contact, which was released on November 22nd, 1996.
Has it been that long already?
It's been that long already.
We've all aged that much.
No, not exactly that. No, it's just been that long. Not that we aged at all.
Oh, I see.
It's the mileage.
Of course, this one was directed by Jonathan Frakes, and the screenplay was by the same people who did the screenplay for the last one, Brandon Braga and Ronald D. Moore.
That Ronald D. Moore. All right, let me give you the plot rundown then. We'll start at the top. It's the 24th century. The crew of the USS Enterprise NCC 1701E has been ordered to patrol the Romulan neutral zone by the Federation to avoid interference with their battle against the insidious Borg. Witnessing the loss of the battle, Captain Jean-Luc Picard ignores orders and takes command of the fleet, engaging the Borg.
But the Borg plan to travel back into the 21st century through a vortex with the intention to stop Earth's first contact with an alien race, the Vulcans. Following the Borg sphere, Picard and his crew realize that they have taken over the Enterprise, that's the Borg, to carry out their mission. Their only chance to do away with the Borg and their seductive queen is to make sure that Zefram Cochrane makes his famous faster-than-light travel to the stars and then has facial surgery so he looks like the other guy from the original series, and then he changes back. Anyway.
Okay. Right. But then they make a statue of him with his hand sort of reaching out to the future. Oh, we're getting ahead of ourselves again.
Yes. Oh, we saw the statue. It's for sale on Neiman Marcus.
No, Christie's.
Okay. Yeah, well, Christie's. Yeah, I'm sorry, Christie's.
And they weren't 20 meters tall like Jordy described.
I'm sorry. It said it. I know I mentioned.
It was the one that was in Archer's. I don't know what it was.
On a shelf.
It was just on a shelf in his cabin, I guess.
Well, what was funny is it says used for stunt work. I was like, well, it's a statue.
It did its own stunts. It's amazing.
It fell off the shelf and survived.
Yeah. It could
in
have.
Space.
All right. So I'll give you some trivia to go along with Star Trek First Contact. Like Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, this is the first movie in the Next Generation movie franchise to be directed by a cast member. Leonard Nimoy and Jonathan Frakes played the first officer of their respective shows and directed two movies in a row. So the Borg Queen was created because the writers were having difficulty in writing dialogue for what was intended to be the Borg's central computer.
Such makes sense, small I guess. Words.
From a stupid mind. Anyway, in early drafts, Picard was supposed to be the one helping Zefram Cochrane on Earth, with Riker fighting the Borg on the Enterprise. The main story was also focused on the happenings of Earth. Of course, they flipped those around when Patrick Stewart said, no, we shouldn't do it this way.
I have to go get my saddle.
Yeah. So he ended up staying on the ship and Riker stayed on the ground.
We'll get into that in a bit. There's a little bit of tomfoolery.
And this would have made a three-peat hat trick, whatever, for people from or characters from other franchises coming into this movie. Avery Brooks had a cameo as Benjamin Sisko from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, ordering Worf to command the USS Defiant. This was filmed, but deleted.
And I wonder, I would like to see that scene because I'm trying to figure out where it would fall in the chronology of what's happening. And I can see it slowing things down if it's in the wrong place because you suddenly jump
to Deep Space Nine.
Well, Worf has you think he would be Worf would have been somewhere else to get those orders and then fly,
right?
Rather than just being there as part of the confab.
It did feel a little discontinuous.
So yeah, it would have probably seemed weird. They probably didn't know where to put that.
All right. So it's time to open it up. And as the last time around with when we talked about generations, we kind of bounced around all over the place. So feel free to bounce.
Do you want to bounce again? I'll start at the top. I never noticed until this most recent, I watched it twice in the past week, most recent viewings, the title, when it starts out and says Star Trek First Contact and then sort of fades into the background and that way, it goes from a white color to kind of a rust. I've never noticed the title change texture. None of the other words do when they're showing the actors, but the title itself changes. Yeah,
it's because it's to go along with the theme that the Earth looks like it was.
The Earth rusted.
Being taken. Well, it was taken over by the Borg. Remember, that's what it looked like when they
were. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Who's got another one?
Well, it was very interesting that you come full circle with this one as well, because now you've gone back to having, and it's credited this way at the end, Star Trek the Motion Picture as the main theme over the credits for the Star Trek movie. You know, it opens up with that, and you have then you go into the First Contact theme. And this was also written, the score was also written by Jerry Goldsmith, who did Star Trek, the motion picture. Mm-hmm. So as we know, the main theme from Star Trek, the Next Generation is the theme from Star Trek, the motion picture.
Yes.
But you now have the author of that work, the composer, is now doing this movie. And I noticed that he was also slipping in the Klingon theme when Worf shows up, the straight up.
Well, they always do that. As soon as see a Klingon, it's like,
Two different themes when they were scouting around the deck. I think they were on 14 trying to get down to 15 or 15 to get to 16. And you'd see Picard's crew walking around. And then they'd cut to Worf. Why do we need two themes for people walking around in the same place in the ship?
Because he's Worf.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was interesting to have that kind of, in a way, coming full circle on that, to going back to that theme was now part of a motion picture again.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, for the record, I love that Klingon theme. Just to hear it, it's awesome.
Speaking of the music, there was another trivia question. If you read into the odd bits and bytes on IMDb, it goes on and on and on.
Oh, yeah.
But they did say they used that that twangy noise from V'ger from the motion picture. Mm-hmm. Went into the Borg music, too. So you hear that. It's kind of a cool thing. But you got to listen hard for it. It's there, but it's there. I got a couple of talking points. It took me a while to recognize him before I went to IMDb, but Lieutenant Hawk is a young Neil McDonough.
Yes.
So I'd never recognized him because I've always seen him as the older Neil McDonough with the white hair, you know, like Damian Dark.
He looks way younger.
He looks more like, more than, I mean, if you think about it, he was white haired in the Green Arrow, and that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. Because that's when I was watching again for the first time in ages, not this recent time before, I said, well, look, that's Damian Dark. Oh, I never, you know.
Right. He must be one of those people that like went gray in his late 20s or 30s or something. But that was, why is it that everyone else is addressed by rank, lieutenant commander, except Worf? It's always Mr. Worf.
He is the punching bag of all those guys. Have you ever seen that No to Worf video from TNG?
No,
it's like he suggests something. No, Worf. No. I'm like, wow, there was a lot of times they turned him down.
That sounds like Tuvok is to Neelix, just condescending all the time.
Yeah.
There's an interesting comment that Picard makes after the Borg have started to take over, and it very much harkens back to the line that Kirk does at the beginning of Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, where he says, you know, let them die. Mm-hmm. You know, they're dying, let them die. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed out of character. And there are reasons for this, but you have the Picard saying, well, shoot them. You'll be doing them a favor. And your first thought is, they didn't shoot you.
Yeah. They actually went out of their way to bring you back.
You know, we kind of worked really hard and got you deborgized. I mean, come on.
Deborgized.
Why? As they're going through this temporal rift following the sphere, they analyze the Earth and they go, wow, it's all Borg. The atmosphere is carbon dioxide, methane, and fluorine. Why would the Borg have changed the atmosphere?
Fluorine's to keep their teeth nice and clean.
No, that's fluoride.
And speaking of teeth, I'm going to jump way to the end.
Well,
Okay,
really quickly though, judging by, we don't know how long ago they had taken it over, right? So it's possible that that's just a byproduct of X number of years of whatever the Borg do. It then generates
all that machinery.
Then wouldn't a Borg cube be filled with that? If so, how are these people walking around with no masks or suits on there?
Well, it could just be a case of they use a planet until they go, we can't live here anymore. And then just they leave.
I know the atmosphere probably doesn't matter because later we see Borg on the deflector dish without any sort of environmental suit.
Yes.
So, doesn't matter to them.
But that's okay. The environmental suits apparently don't have thrusters. It's like, okay, that was a great idea.
Well, that was one of the bigger plot holes, I think, is the Borg are out in space. They're doing their thing. But to deter them in engineering, they wanted to hit the plasma thing so it would mess up their, their flesh. Part of their bodies. Well, wouldn't space do that too?
Not you necessarily. Would
think. I mean, well, you're exposed to radiation, but I don't know.
Radiation? It's cold. You freeze. Skin.
Look what it did to the complexion. All that radiation. It just it was a mess.
Look what it did to what's her name on Discovery? You know. And,
well, you know, I have a question. Speaking of that, I have a question. Why did the Earth look so horrible? The
oceans were gone.
The image is like it was 1950s cloud cover Earth, just like these.
It looked like the clouds. Old Universal logo, you know, where black and white from movie.
And it made no sense. I mean, we're well into the era where you just go to NASA and get some photos. That's it. You're done. It looked horrible.
I don't understand
why.
I challenge the writers on this one, but if the Borg had gone back in time and disrupted the timeline, wouldn't the time agents just come along and fix it?
Well, do they fix it or do they just investigate? I'm not sure what they do. I mean, they came in and they talked to Cisco.
We're screwed.
And
went, out of here. Oh,
well, you know, there we're we screwed. Go.
Bye.
I didn't realize until they were standing next to each other. I mean, Jonathan Frakes is a tall man. Mm-hmm. We saw him on the cruise. He's 6'3". And when they show him standing next to James Cromwell, who's even taller, I had to go look. Yeah, he doesn't look 6'3". He looks like he's about 5'10". James Cromwell is 6'7". Like, wow, that is a tall man.
He's already in the stars. See, he doesn't have to go that far in the ship.
We could have solved this whole problem if they had put the shields up while they fired on the sphere so they didn't beam over secretly and the whole thing would have been fixed. But shame on them.
I do like the fact that I do not think this was planned, but I do like the fact that they were able to use the thing that I thought was useless and still think it's useless in Generations, but the emotion chip. And say, all right, he's got the emotion chip. Right. What are we going to do with that now? And then they put it to use. The only thing I didn't like about it is I need you to turn off your emotion chip. And he just kind of nods his head to the side. Just done.
Yeah.
What? Why
do you need a mechanical motion to do an electronic thing?
It was a subplot in the last movie. Now it's not a thing. You can just turn it off.
So when Picard beams down the first time with Data and Troy, he says, number one, you have the bridge. When did Riker beam down? Suddenly he's there talking to Deanna about Cochrane and Deanna's drunk. When did he beam down?
He beamed down when you didn't see him behind the bar and then he walked in.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
Oh, you're drunk.
No, we'll get to that later.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Right.
How is Data riddled with bullets when he's standing next to the Phoenix and Lily just pelts him and he's completely undamaged? I mean, they had to have hit something critical with all those bullets.
Well, he's been hit before with just something. Remember, what was that episode where it hit him and his head was damaged?
Yeah.
So Chuck is saying, how come there was no damage at all? Yeah, from all
no damage
bullets?
At all.
What I'm saying is the bullets, not, you think the bullets at least tear.
I would have expected like his arm to twitch or something. You hit a servo, a pipe, a feed, a line, a wire. I don't know. Something had to go. And why? Getting back to Borg physiology, why do they need the ship's atmosphere at 39.1 C? If they can survive out in space, who cares? Maybe they need it that warm in the ship because, ooh, baby, it's cold out there. I don't know what...
Well, I always thought that because I figured that the temperature probably helps with the implants, you know, and your skin. And I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud, but
perhaps an analgesic cream or getting ahead again.
Yeah, indeed. I thought that it was a good option to use the Borg in this, though, that you needed to come up with an enemy, and this enemy didn't really need a lot of explaining, but you were able to then use the fish out of water element to have an explanation given, you know, to Lily about this is what they do, this is that,
yeah,
type of thing, how things work.
Well, also at this time, remember when they were introduced in TNG, of course, we saw them several times, but we didn't see them again until now. So they were still a good character, something to play off of. But it, later on in later seasons with Voyager and stuff, I think they got kind of diluted after that, you know, after that point. But
because everybody figured out how to defeat them.
Yeah.
It's right. Not that hard, really, you know.
Just pull the plug out. Yeah.
We mentioned a few cameos, actually some more subtle ones that you may not have recognized. Is Brandon Braga is actually the man sitting on the table at the nightclub, and Ronald D. Moore is also in there as well.
Sitting on the table?
And here's a name, a blast from the past, Michael Zaslow, or Eddie, from the holodeck scene, is also the young ensign who dies in the man trap. That was kind of cool. I never really thought about it. You know, I kind of enjoyed the music, Ooby Dooby, when they were playing on the jukebox.
Ooby Doo Wah.
Never gave it a second thought until this time around. That's Roy Orbison, folks. And if you watch the live.
But I have a question. I have a question about that, which. I do not understand why somebody who was probably not born until like 2030 would be enamored with a specific, you know, with this rock and roll era. It's, if you work out that math, it just, and what you would be interested in, it just, it's so out of,
I don't know, whack with. There's lots of people. I mean, I'm interested in, you know, classical music.
I love disco.
Well, that's, well,
disco was in your lifespan. Disco was in your,
yeah, I was going to your
Mozart was not in my lifespan.
I disagree.
If they could play the original Roy Orbison Ooby Dooby, why did they need a cover for Magic Carpet Ride?
Well,
that weren't just, no Steppenwolf, people.
Well, if that's the case, it's probably just rights.
Well,
you know, you have a budget.
Yeah, well, even in, you know, the newer Star Trek film, the Kelvin timeline, they were, listen to that classical music, and it's like rap, or, you know.
Yeah, we've got that. We've got the Beastie Boys.
I think Doctor Who did that once, too, with Britney Spears. Let's play some classical music.
That's right.
Although, another bit of fun trivia, though it wasn't written in the script, the Vulcan who salutes Zefram Cochran, his name is Solkar, that is Sarek's grandfather. As the story goes.
As the story goes. I was very disappointed because I remember that scene a bit differently. I could have sworn that Cochran shot the Vulcan, you know.
Well, no, that's later. That's later.
Oh, okay.
I heard it both ways.
And you're all astronauts on some kind of Star Trek.
Star Wars. Star Wars.
You get to do that once. And that was it.
Yep.
The only time you get to do that.
You know, it is a little funny. They did feed Cochran and Lily a lot of information about the future and didn't wipe their brain or anything, you know, just kind of let it go with the knowledge. Like they wouldn't do anything different knowing all that stuff.
I found a nasty inconsistency again. The Borg invade, they're in engineering, they're trying to get engineering. Data gets sucked in. That whole deck is Borged outside of engineering, right? They're walking around.
They're Borged.
There's Borg wandering around. The corridors are
Swedish. Decked
out. Definitely not Swedish. Yeah. Later, when they're abandoning ship, Picard goes down to deck 16. Not a trace. They've cleaned up everything Borg right outside engineering. Deck 16.
They moved along.
They took their stuff and they
They're still in there.
And the board were like, oh, wait, this is the wrong floor. Let's move up one.
I would have been happy if they'd put a different sticker because, you know, engineering has different levels. But no, I don't know what was happening there.
You mean all 2053 level or what was it in Star Trek 5? 27?
Yeah. We're falling. We're still falling. We're falling.
I think it was like 78 floors.
It was something crazy.
It took longer for them to fall than it did for, you know, Kirk to fall off of the mountain.
Anyway. All right. Wait a minute.
I'm hoping that because the Enterprise at the end, we get this wrap up. I've got two questions about this wrap up that they do, but I'll go with the second one first. That they've sounds like Geordi has reverse engineered how the Borg ship managed to create the vortex, and so they're just going to like go back to
no big deal, time. Just file.
Yeah, no big deal, no big whoop. We now can just do that.
Yeah.
But boy, I certainly hope that they have a spare particle emitter when they before they go to warp. But the second thing is this cover line, which I didn't understand.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Where Worf says
the moon's gravity gravitational
hid the warp signature. Well, first of all, they weren't at warp, so they had no warp signature.
Exactly. This whole thing. Yeah. I had to watch that. Like, what? Wait, what? What?
And second, you're trying to tell me that if you've got a small moon, and let's face it, we got a small moon, That's enough no moon to hide you from somebody else's spaceship. Well, forget cloaking devices. Just go near a planet for crying out loud. Moon, no one will ever see you.
The moon's gravitational field masked our warp signature, he says. Yet Lily sees them go through the portal.
Oh yeah.
What? Wait, where did you warp to or from or why?
I mean, I'd rather them not said anything than say that.
Yeah, let's get out of here. That was a terrible misstep on editing.
Oh, and let's go back to the very beginning of the movie. This is the first time we saw the Enterprise E.
Yes.
Yeah, and I loved the look of this ship. I think it's a beautiful ship.
It's sleek.
It's sexy. Has they lowered the neck, you know, on it, and
it has all the little detail-y bits that you need for the theater.
The that's right. The telescope scene where Geordi points the telescope up and he's going to show him the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And Cochran goes, I love a good peep show. Yeah. Okay. Notice the scenery around this set. There's smoke from the attack the night before and it's blowing by and the trees aren't moving at all. All I could picture were those big fans just off camera.
That's exactly what what was there. Yeah.
Somebody's waving a board.
You can't do that and not move the trees. I'm sorry.
Well, that's a bit hard. You need a much bigger fan for that.
I want to know, how long does it take to become Borg from the time you get those nanoprobes injected? At what point are you officially declared Borg? Or are you walking around with this like junior assistant name tag on? Because Ensign Lynch was converted pretty quickly.
Right.
Associate.
But yet they showed a whole bunch more later on that were it's sort of the uniforms half-formed. And all yeah, that hair. Kind of,
yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, we've seen in Picard, remember they were people that were in various phases of becoming Borg.
Mm. Maybe, or D-Borg guys.
I don't maybe know
there's
how long
different dosages take. Like you need 100 milligrams of nanoprobes and you only need 25 milligrams. I don't know.
If your Borg lasts more than 4 hours, please
don't. When they get into the holodeck.
If your Borg implants,
if your assimilation lasts longer than 4 hours, please consult.
When you get into the holodeck scene, the whole Dixon Hill thing, and he flips over to the nightclub and people are dancing, and you can see Ruby, the blonde, waiting in the back for her cue. She's just standing there, and it's like, and action. She walks up through the crowd.
She's checking her watch and waiting.
No, she wasn't even doing that. Well, she wasn't watching.
It was just a badly written program. You know, it's like, wait for main character to be within this parameter.
You can't blame it on the programming.
There's like 10 characters in a line waiting. Oh, my turn. Oh.
What else?
It seemed like a lot of effort to go through as well.
Just to get that chip?
To get the gun.
Oh
yeah, to get the. I mean, it's like
why don't you just yeah.
There's no armory any place, anywhere?
You couldn't just call up a book or something that already had guns laying around?
Or is the theory that you can make the argument, even though you can change, I'm assuming, the randomness, that if you try to use a phaser rifle or something like that, that they would have already adapted their protection to deflect that, but a bullet they had not been exposed to, so you get X number of shots off with a gun.
He was shooting a lot.
Yeah, but I think he shot more than he needed to. I think that was one of the problems Lily was having. Is it's like, I think he's dead already.
Yeah, I think you got him.
Hey, why he could have, instead of doing through all that production, he could have just called up a blank white room with a secret room behind it and a hole in the wall so he could, and an armory in that secret room, and just picked them off.
Because that wasn't in the book. You had to go back to the Dixon Hill story. We all know and love Dixon Hill.
Yeah.
So when they're doing the deflector dish thing, the miniatures, as they were showing them, really didn't work for me. There were times when, like, where did Picard just go? When they pan out and they show the whole deflector dish, and you see the little Borg and the little Worf and the...
I was very confused that last shot that you see after the particle emitter is gone.
Yeah.
I swear I'm seeing three people.
You did. It took, around there. I did. It took me a long time. There's one guy who's just standing in the corner, and it took me a while to figure out what that was. I caught it on the second one. That's the Borg that Worf hacked up. He's magnetically clamped down, but he's standing in the corner, staring off into nothing. Oh. I'm like, who is that? And why would he just be standing there doing nothing? Because there's like three or four little Borg on the particle emitter.
Right.
And there's one dude off to the side doing absolutely nothing. He's like, oh, that's the one that Worf knifed. So that was, I did catch on to that because I was going to jump all over that too. And went, no, that makes sense.
And speaking about things that we love, apparently one of the things that Star Trek loves is Moby Dick, because just like Star Trek II,
yeah,
we get quotes from Moby Dick.
Well, at least these were real quotes. Star Trek II was
adapting the quote.
I think they missed an opportunity, though. One of my favorite scenes in the whole movie is without a doubt the scene between Lily and Picard when she confronts him and says, Jean-Luc, blow up the damn ship. And she convinces him. They come out of, I don't know, what was that? That wasn't the ready room. It was
the conference room.
Yeah, the new conference room. Crusher should have given a look to Lily like,
right,
you did that? But no, it's just sort of this casual, okay, let's go. Like, wait, no, Gates, you missed it. That was a golden opportunity to like, holy mother of God, you changed his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, that shouldn't she, because she said, no, there's no change in his mind. Don't go in there. And then, look, she changed his mind when she went in there.
Okay.
We haven't never really officially talked about the fact that the emergency medical hologram.
Robert appears. Picardo. Yes.
Yes.
Badgie.
Not Badgie. Badgie's there, but he's been one of the Borg. It's, you know, he just finds it more comfortable being a Borg.
He let the Borg transport over, I see.
Who let the Borg out?
And although we don't have Neelix, we have Ethan Phillips.
Right. He's the maitre d' in the holodeck nightclub. Right. Picard says this line as they're starting to evacuate. He says, see you on Gravetta Island. Yeah. No, it's like, wait, somebody missed a memo because that just came out of nowhere. I'm imagining the people that left going, where are we supposed to rendezvous?
Yeah.
I think something edited out that just made that a little weird. Like, where did that come from? Did you notice when they were flying the Phoenix and the lights are coming on and they're pushing buttons that many of the buttons say TOS? You didn't catch that one. Okay.
No, in terms of service.
I'm extending my warranty.
All right. I've got one that
was it just me? Was it just me or and I played it a couple of times going, just when Worf says assimilate this,
yes,
it doesn't sound like Michael Dorn.
It doesn't. It does sound different. I've always thought that.
I wonder if it was an uptake.
Or it could be him, but like they recorded it at a different
time. Yeah, that's what I meant.
You know, later. Or, you know.
It doesn't sound like him. It does. It's not like it doesn't sound like the rest of the scene. It doesn't sound like, and I
assimilate to
it,
this.
And I went back and I went back and I went back going, I'm sure it's him, but it doesn't sound like him.
It must have been done at a different time.
Well, remember in Star Trek 2009, Will Wheaton replaced all the Romulan voices.
Okay.
You know, so maybe somebody redid Michael Dorn's there for,
He had a terrible
catchphrase, and they go, no, we got to replace that.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably like, I'm here. Yeah.
Borg you.
Borg you. Now I will shoot you. No, that doesn't work at all. What are we doing here? That's just
ABC.
Reach for the stars.
So see, we give Craig all this grief. It's hard to come up with that catchphrase, that zinger. You know, you want to have that zinger. So. Yep.
I'll be back.
So we're near the climactic scene. The Borg Queen tells Data to release the encryption and turn over commands. He reaches for this panel that's about 6 feet off the ground. Who is that intended for? The tall Ferengi? I don't know.
I assumed that was for blocking. They wanted to have the scene where they're confronting each other. And if Data, you know, if Brent is looking down at a console, it's not going to work. So they decided, well, it's going to be up here instead. So, they can be at eye level.
I can see Geordi jumping for that thing. Toes. Yeah. Geordi's got to go get a step stool and everybody else is going.
The only panel that'll work is on one up there.
The Borg Queen is grabbed onto Jean-Luc's leg and Data reaches
not that
up
tightly,
and
though. Not that grabs tightly, apparently.
Up, and she goes, and you can see she's got fillings. So much for perfection.
Well, the Borg fixed her teeth, okay?
Yeah, come on. I mean, gee.
They value good dentistry and hygiene.
If she was truly Borg, she wouldn't need fillings.
I also think it was odd that, you know, in these explanations that didn't need explanations, and so you explain it, and you're just making it worse. Stop.
Like this show
the conversation Picard has with the Borg Queen about how we'd met the Borg Queen before and blah 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 blah, blah.
Like you were always there. Yes, so close. You know,
I was in the other room. All that stuff that was happening. You missed me in the Next Generation episodes. I was just in the other room. You know, you didn't see me, but I was there all the time.
We never heard you. Yeah, there's the writers trying to cover.
Never
up.
Never mentioned you. None of that stuff. You know. So they're better off not, trying to explain some of these things.
Yeah, there's certain things about the Borg we just don't need to know.
No.
So overall, I like these special effects, but the one that stood out for me besides Earth, because a lot of it I thought was really good, and some of it was just in-camera trickery. Like, I like the fact you have the upside-down shot of walking across the hull, that type of
thing. Yeah, and you can see Italy and Sicily back there. Yep.
The Vulcan, when they pan up at the very end, the last shot when they're, you know, rocking out in the hut and the scene pulls up towards space with the watch the Vulcan ship bounce around like it's a rubber ball.
Really?
Trying to hold its position that shot.
I knew something was off about that. It never looked real close. The one that hasn't stood up well for me is when they're lowering the Borg Queen's upper torso and putting it into the robotic body.
Yeah,
like the green screen gets a little off. Yeah.
Yeah. I
it's good.
I thought overall it was well executed.
Yeah. Now, as much as I bash on this, this is right up there. If not tied for, I'd even put a little bit ahead of Wrath of Khan as my favorite movie. Yes. This is one of my favorite Star Trek movies.
Yeah, I would say it's up there as well. I love it. I mean, I've seen it so many times, I almost didn't need to look at it to review it here.
If I didn't like it, it wouldn't be on the wall right behind on camera.
That's your book that's on the wall behind you.
Podcasting for Dummies and Bowling for Borg.
Here's the plug.
Data pulls up a 7-10 split as he throws the Borg into the other Borg.
Yeah.
Ooh. All right. Well, should we rate?
1 to 10 nacelles.
One to ten nacelles. One to ten particle emitters. You need to have spares.
1 to 10. No, wait. What was Reg trying to replace? The
with the tubing
coil.
The...
Yeah, he's making a still is what he was for.
Yeah.
Cochran goes, "Looks good to me."
Yeah. Tell me when you're done,
Reg. You're going to need to cover this with a nanopolymer. Sounds good.
That's right.
All right. Well, Craig, why don't we start with you for 1 to 10, whatever scale you choose.
I'm going to say it's going to be a solid 9 particle emitters for me.
Ooh, 9 particle emitters.
At least. Very good. Yeah. Because it's hard to be perfect. I would say Khan is probably just right at the top, right above it, but not much.
Okay. I will go next. I am going to give it an 8.75. And this is my, of the Next Generation movies, this is my favorite of those. And it is one of my favorite Star Trek movies because it incorporates the television show in good ways. Mm-hmm. You have a much better banter.
There's humor without trying to be funny.
Right. The forced, you know, I had all the problems with Generations, including the sailing ship. I feel like they got the exact same feelings across among the different characters without doing something stupid like that.
Yep.
So I think it was the oddest thing is these are the same writers. These are exactly the same people that came up with the story.
So. Yeah. Mr. Worf, I regret some of the things I said earlier.
Some of the things?
Yeah, he's just a some.
You're not in Montana anymore.
Those were the moments that made this movie. And I'm going to go with Craig. I'm going to give it a solid 9.
Okie dokie. Very good. And of course, we want to hear if you have a rating of your own on 1 to 10 particle emitters or the scale of your own choosing.
We're looking at you, Crazy Joe.
That's right. Yeah. What do you think of Star Trek First Contact?
Does that mean we're moving on to Insurrection next?
Yeah, it means we're moving on to the two movies. I'm going, well, let's see. There's always Star Trek V to balance these out, I suppose. But...
Oh, you want to review that again?
Oh, my goodness.
You want to review five again?
Are we
again?
Going to do a series at some point here?
Insurrection and Nemesis. Oh, it's going to be so much fun. All right. But we are done with that for now. So it is time to come back from main mission with some kind of sound effect, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. Here, we'll just walk out the door. I'm out. Yeah.
Just kind of left the
wrong
room.
Door. I can't breathe.
And we're going to head into our warp speed roundtable. So do we have a sound effect for that? There's buttons on the table. Sure.
2, 2, 1. I think that was.
10, 10, 3, 2, 1. All righty. Let's see. Now, last time around, I don't know if we have any other responses to this. We asked if you could make one meal with a replicator, what would it be? And with whom would you share that meal? We put that out on Facebook. I did not get any specific responses.
Yes, you did.
I did?
You got one and I got one.
Oh.
It's from the same guy.
It was the same answer?
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's Gary Lindros.
It threw me because it said photo, and it was because, okay.
Oh.
Double chocolate cake with Deanna Troi. Oh, well, I think that, yes.
Well, he's going for a couple's date because he also said jambalaya with Riker.
Wait, when here. No, I was thinking gumbo with Sisko.
Gumbo, that sounds pretty good too.
Yeah, but you'd have to let him make it because I'm sure that he'd be very finicky.
Oh, heavens, yes.
What it was. Mm-hmm. You couldn't use the replicator probably, so because his father would not want that. So
he'd be out back washing potatoes.
Exactly. All right, but this time around, we're going to ask who has the worst job in Starfleet? And then it says, bonus, what do you think the worst job in Starfleet is? Well, I kind of combine them as I don't have a specific person. I'm just. So for me, I came up with more the job, like this person that must have this job is the worst job in Starfleet. So for me, it's a job that probably sounded really great to this person when they started, which is,
isn't that the way it goes with everybody?
Yeah. Well, this is, you get to design the next starship in our, you know, in our fleet. And then you find out, oh, we make a new starship for every starship in our fleet. We don't have really any classes. You know, the guy's going, well, I put a nacelle on the top. Well, I put one on the bottom. I put two on the side. I put one. I didn't have a secondary hull. I think
it's called creative director of Starfleet. Yeah,
it's just like, could you guys make two? The plans are good. Make a bunch of them. Nope. They all got to look different than each other. Well, this one's going to have a little bridge over the top of it to connect the nacelles. And this one's going to have the nacelles inaccessible to the rest of the ship. I'm running out of ideas.
Has somebody got the number of Johnny Ives?
Right. Let's go with 5.5 nacelles on this ship.
Yeah. All right.
Freaking lasers on their heads.
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead, Chuck.
This one's been threatened a lot, but I've never actually seen or heard anybody doing this job. It was, what was it, cleaning out the waste disposal chutes or something that they keep threatening on Voyager. And it's used as some kind of punishment. Oh, I almost said it. Oh, dear, I said it. Take a drink. Some kind of punishment. Some kind of. I've become so progress. Oh, my gosh. The last episode I watched had four of them, like, bam, 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 right in a row. I can't take this anymore. Neither can my liver.
Well, Mariner was trying to empty the holodeck trash, whatever the receptacles, whatever they called it.
He was happy to have that job. No, Boimler was. Boimler was happy to be cleaning up the board or the ready room or the conference room.
Oh, he was the guy that came around in the evenings and took all the trash cans and emptied.
That's right.
To be honest with you, I came up with a question, but I was having trouble trying to fit it in. I was thinking, would it be the guy that has to clean the windows from the outside of the ship?
Or washing Neelix's socks?
Laundry. That's it. Laundry.
Laundry.
Somebody on that ship. Or do they just put it back in the replicator and they let do. It they, recycle?
That's all that they do. They just recycle it. They don't wash it at
all. That's cheating.
It is.
Hey, you know that guy, Lieutenant Steve Jobs, he only has one program for a black shirt and some jeans.
It's a black turtleneck. That's it.
His mock turtleneck.
Yeah. I don't know. I was trying to think of a good one. Window washer came to mind because, you know, I'd always be out there doing my shift and then we get attacked. You know, you got to hurry up and get back in the house.
Get back in the house. That'll be the command. Craig, you need to get back in the house because we're going to warp. Oh, good. Okay.
just a couple more minutes.
Can I clean more than two windows before a Borg ship flies in here and starts shooting?
Hey, it could be worse. You could be cleaning the windows on Discovery. All of a sudden it just starts to spin and woo, off you go.
Yeah.
All right. Those are our suggestions on the worst job in Starfleet. And you may have your own opinion about what the worst job in Starfleet is. So you can leave us a message on Facebook and let us know what you think is a horrible job. And if it's a job that was mentioned or a job that you're just making up, I feel like a lot of these horrible jobs, we're going to see somebody doing them on Lower Decks at one point or another. So
Mike Rose, dirty Starfleet jobs.
Lieutenant Mike Rowe.
All right. But now it's about time to refill the dilithium chamber with all this brand new dilithium that we got off our little miniature train from the last episode, that whole train car full of dilithium, and warp on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com. And I will be starting my 30 days April podcast today, spectacular, oddly enough, on April 1st, going through exactly, Eric, so 30 days.
Yeah.
That is coming up right away. And you'll also hear a couple of voices that you might recognize
in
the story.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. And who speaks for you guys?
Go ahead, Chuck. I'm tired.
You can find us by searching for Technorama Podcast anywhere on the internet or go to chuckchat.com Technorama. We'd love to see you there. Of course, you know, there's all the other social media places, but that's where you'll find everything. So Technorama Podcast.
Excellent. All right. With that said, it's time to hit the theme, boys.
You are in error.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nomad's really getting hostile.
Yeah, man.
Okay,
man.
Let's try this one.
If you like the show, like Nomad does, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on the red shirt.
Chuck screwed.
Uh-oh, he's got the red shirt. We're safe at least.
Yeah. Plumber. That's it. Plumber on the ship. That'd be worse.
Christopher Plumber?